Have that dump button ready, because I honestly have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth.
Get ready for takeoff.
There is no way that I'm tapping out now.
You're listening to Unkillable.
If you didn't kill us last night, we are unkillable.
Hosted by Brandon Tierney.
What's happening, everybody? Episode number 2, Unkillable. Hey, by the way, the first one was a blast. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. And let's just jump right into it. Before we do that, I want to tell you guys what the initial plan was when we launched this thing. Initially, hey, they play a game, we go live after it, we hammer things out, and we kind of just rehash what went down. And then the other plan was on Thursdays, we kind of, you know, set the wheels in motion for the next game. We preview a little bit. Do I really have to waste anybody's time previewing this game? If you can't beat the Patriots, it is over, dude. So for this particular one, now, if they happen to beat the Patriots and they better, and they will, the Texans, I'm not so sure about the Texans, but if they win this game or when they do, we'll go a little bit more of a deep dive into some of the schematics, and we'll get into maybe have a guest on or really attack the Texans personnel and all that stuff. But the first thing that jumped out to me, and I just don't understand this at all, after the game, and I will rehash two or three things that drove me nuts from the last game, but after the game, Devontae Adams, who's been here for 2 minutes, felt compelled to speak to the entire locker room and basically tell them, hey, I don't know what's going on here, but this is awful. I just want, let that resonate with people for a second. And Devontae Adams is amazing, and I think he's a very diligent pro. However, and a great player, Hall of Famer. But he wasn't a good pro with the Raiders. He quit on the Raiders. So just think about this. You have a guy, no matter how good he is, and again, he's amazing, and he's Rodgers' boy. I get that. He comes in, he takes one look, and he just levies a wrecking ball to the culture of the Jets. How pathetic is that? Frighteningly, it's actually gotten worse than I think, certainly I and many of you thought that it was, because, you know, you react to all the nonsense during the games and, of course, Saleh's firing and downing and, you know, everything else with Hackett, right? We've hit that thing a million times. I didn't think it was this bad. Now, the record aside, that's bad. But just think about that. Imagine going to a new place of employment. Now, granted, in your new place of employment, you know one person who's the most important person in the building. Let's face it, Aaron Rodgers has all the juice and nobody else has none. And by the way, it's completely disjointed. It shouldn't be like that, the balance of power. We all know that, but it is. But imagine going into a new law firm, or you're a coach and you know the AD, but you don't know anybody else, or whatever your line of work might be. And you feel as if you have, and I don't mind this, but that you have the latitude to speak on the issues that are so deeply rooted that you just can't bite your tongue. That is disgraceful. Now, I want to make something else clear. you know, when you do terrestrial radio, and you guys hear me and Sal every day on the Fan from 10 to 2, there's just certain words you can't say. Can't say them. You get banged out by the FCC, you get fined. Now, while it's fun to curse, I'm not going to lie, it is. Makes me feel a little bit better. It's cathartic. I think many of you would agree with that, especially watching this shit-ass team. I'm not going to just gratuitously drop, you know, curses just to do it. Because I think, and I've always thought, and I don't claim to be brilliant, but I take pride in having a modicum of intelligence. I think, you know, that kind of language is really a disguise for a lack of intelligence. So I'm not just going to just, you know, drop F-bombs here and just turn into a raving lunatic unnecessarily. But I will say this. I'm going to drop one right here. To do that and to walk into your new place of employment while you have massive stones to do that, it's a fucking joke. It is an absolute joke that was even necessary. Imagine that. You know, one guy, you come in, you look 53 men in the eyes. Again, it takes brass balls, and he's got the equity around the league to do it. And I'm not mad at Devontae, but does that not underscore the bigger issue with the Jets? The culture, there is no culture. What? I was going to try to describe the culture. There's zero culture. And speaking of culture, all right? So Aaron Rodgers who goes on the McAfee show once a week. And speaking of vocabulary and intelligence, always feels the need to incessantly drop words that most people or some people don't even know what they mean. And, you know, that's cute when he first got traded here. And, you know, that was, I guess it was somewhat therapeutic when he went down against the Bills in week one. And then when there was a thought, hey, maybe Aaron Rodgers is coming back and he's going to defy modern medicine with the new Achilles procedure, that little fastening of the, it's a different procedure. So there was a thought that maybe he can actually do it. You tuned in and you know, you're hanging on every word. You know what? It's not fun. You know what? It's not pertinent. You know what? It doesn't matter when you suck. And right now, Aaron Rodgers sucks. The Aaron Rodgers train has gotten them nowhere. And as I used the word culture before, now it is time. It is time right now for Garrett Wilson, for Sauce, to the younger players who are going to be here for a while, to stop kissing his ass. And I'm not a big proponent of, as a matter of fact, I can't stand this, when wide receivers, most of whom are divas, obviously. And of course, if they don't get the rock, they're not going to get paid because they're not putting up the numbers. And when you put up numbers, you get paid. We all get that. But I don't like, I never have. I'm kind of old school in this regard. You don't just flail your arms up and show up the quarterback and I was open and just start barking at people, quarterbacks and coordinators on the sideline. I don't think that's how a good, well-oiled machine should comport themselves. However, it is now time for Garrett Wilson and anybody else that's open. It's okay. You can bark at the almighty Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers has played like shit. Go back the other night. Now, think about how they look to start the game against the Steelers. Man, they look pretty good. You got Breece in space. You have some things cooking. I'm like, all right, here we go. The place was quiet. The Jets did a very effective job of muting one of the toughest venues along with Arrowhead and two or three others in the NFL. That place had 75,000 zombies in it. There was no juice on offense. Russell Wilson was doing nothing. He looked old. He looked tired. And the Jets looked like they had a little pop. They had a little snap, right? And then you're up 9 points. And this is why Aaron Rodgers can talk all he wants about whatever he wants to talk about. He's just not getting the job done. When you're up 15-6, I believe it was a 19-yard back shoulder throw to Lazard. Beautiful throw. And listen, he's Rodgers, so he can spin it, and he made some sick throws. And he has from week one, even against the Niners, a couple of good ones. But you're at your own 40. You're up by 9. There's a buck 40 to go, and you throw an unforgivable interception. That's it, man. Now the cat's out the bag. Whatever momentum and whatever destination you and I and we all thought that the Aaron Rodgers train would get us to, that's done. So now everybody's got to get out of the caboose and jump up to the front of the train and get their hands on the steering wheel. And if that means if Rodgers, you know, throws one in the dirt or doesn't see somebody who's wide open on a go route or any route, crossing route, deep shallow, doesn't matter. If he misses somebody, and that somebody particularly is Garrett Wilson, who I feel is he's trying to certainly assimilate, which I get. And again, I respect him as a pro, but he's not a rookie. I can't stand when rookies bark at quarterbacks. You have no right to do that. Not a second year guy. He's a third year guy. Now, I don't think Garrett Wilson's great. I think some people do. I think he's really good. Maybe with a chance to be great. But he's certainly earned the right to let Aaron Rodgers know you're not doing your job. You know what I mean? I think there's too much sitting around and waiting and hoping that St. Aaron is going to elevate this team from the dead. Newsflash, he's not. He's not good enough anymore. He's 40. Every week, it's the hamstring, it's the ankle, it's the knees, limping left and right. He's a complete non-threat to leave the pocket, which schematically is a different set of issues for the Jets. Because you don't have to coach from a defensive perspective against one thing. So to me, like there's a lot of problems, man. And you know, let's face it. Does anybody really think that this season's going to go where we want it to go? Probably not. Now look down. See where it says unkillable? Again, I told you this the first episode. The essence of the unkillable mantra is me like a lunatic getting on the air the Monday after the Bills game, refusing to accept what I knew was a reality, but I couldn't tap out and I wasn't packing it in, especially since they won the game. And especially at that point where I'm like, All right. I mean, you know, it's year three for Zach. You know, maybe he takes the next step. He didn't. But the unkillable, as much as I say the season's probably over, and it likely is, there's going to be so many deep dives with NFL people on this podcast about who they need to hire, what coach, what GM, all the things that they need to do. Now, last episode, I also railed on the owner. It's not personal. I've met Woody Johnson. He's a sweetheart of a human being. He's an atrocious owner. So as I look at this, right, and we will we will die our deaths on football Sundays. We already have five times this year. We will die our slow deaths on Sunday night football and Monday and Thursday. That's inevitable. Until it changes, that is our sad lot in life. All right. You know it, and I know it. But the unkillable mantra is we will never give up. So this is part therapeutic, this pod. This is part just let it rip. And when you let it rip, sometimes you feel better. This is part solution-based. A little bit of everything, all right? Now, how do they actually regenerate? Where's the path to a meaningful, I can't believe I'm saying this, a meaningful November, not even a meaningful December, November. Well, you start and you got to mop the floor with that awful Patriots team. I don't know if they will. I think that they'll win, but just eke out a win. And by then, maybe Reddick gets in the flow. You know, maybe Rodgers starts to wake up. Maybe what we saw from Breece is a bit of a foreshadow. Like, I think that that's, for me, the most frustrating aspect of this season. And I said this on the first pod, like most of the times we go into a season and I generally skew more optimistically. I'm an optimistic based person, because to me, if you can't be optimistic, and it's always, I mean, always, even when there's no reason to be, shrouded in negativity, that's just not for me. There's too much negativity in the world. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to be blind to the reality of how shitty this season has been, and in all likelihood, how much worse it's going to get. Because there's now two chances, beginning with the Pats and then the Texans game. If you lose the Texans game, it's absolutely over. Pack it up. It's done. We're wiped out. Season shot. There's no coming back from 3-6 at that point. How much further can, oh, wow. Well, oh, like when CBS puts up the graphic, you know, division leaders, wild card, in the hunt. How fucking tired are you all these years seeing in the hunt? Like, you don't have to throw us that bone. You know, I'm sitting on my couch like this. It's the fourth quarter, whether it's Darnold, whether it's Zach, whether it's whomever, Tim Boyle, and they pop up the graphic and the Jets are 5-9. And just in the hunt. Yeah, we're in the hunt. We're in the hunt because mathematically the last breath hasn't been sucked out of our lungs. Like, I can't stand that. All right. But I generally go into the seasons hopeful. And even when I know there's no legitimate Super Bowl hope, I latch on to the young pieces that I think eventually could become a piece of a Super Bowl puzzle. And I think what's puzzling to me is the stark regression from some of their core players. And I mentioned it last time, Garrett, Sauce, a few others, but I watched this team and what is good? Like, legitimately, what's good? I mean, I'm still waiting for Gibson to do something on special teams. He had one moment, week one against the Bills. Since he's done nothing. I mean, you don't have any return game. Zuerlein is off. I mean, how he's still on the team is beyond. Greg the leg. Oh, he'll figure it out. Yeah, he'll figure it out in December when the Jets are 3-11 and 3-12. I mean, why is he on the team? When you throw around the word accountability and you keep rolling out a guy who's getting, you know, PATs and kicks blocked and shanking and doinking, you're not accountable. You're accepting of substandard play. So for me, if it was my team, he wouldn't be on the team. So the kicking game has sucked. The return game has sucked. The run defense stinks. Like, I knew, and I was worried about this, and I think a lot of you were missing this. John Franklin Myers and a few other big-bodied, under-the-radar, run-stuffing glue guys are gone. Now, I didn't really rail on the Jets at that point because I understand and understood the complexity of the cap and the limitations of a salary cap. You know, that's one of the things you have to deal with in the NFL, which is why it's really important to draft the right quarterback and try to win within that first rookie contract. Of course, we've yet to be blessed with that. So we're going after somebody who very well might be just about done and give them a ton of money and hope that it works. And it has not. So I look around, not stopping the run. All right, Reddick's going to help. Reddick's going to make a few plays, there's no doubt. But like that whole thing is just perplexing. You let go of a guy who fit in Bryce Huff. Now, he hasn't fit, and showing signs lately, didn't fit at all in Philly early. So the guy that you bring in, for some foolish, moronic reason, is not here. Now he's here, and the season's hanging by a thread, and we're supposed to get excited about this. And it is very hard, even for me, as a, you know, as a fairly optimistic type, to, thank God for the Yankees, they keep me sane, let's go Yanks, Yanks in six, to look at this pragmatically and strip away the emotion of hope and possibility and just look at this from an X's and O's point of view. What's working? I just told you, basically nothing. Your star receiver's not quite the same guy. They have no action on the tight end spot. You know, that's the other thing I don't get. Why is it? Now, it kind of goes back to Woody. That's why Woody's been in my crosshairs now. He has to be. And he is on this pod, and he is on my show with Sal on The Fan. But why is it that certain franchises always seem to swing and miss on the same thing? Think about the tight ends the Jets have tried. Jason Morrow, remember when they drafted him? I mean, you can't even get a modern tight end, and Conklin's okay, but you can't get a tight end that you line up that actually strikes fear in the opposition. How the hell is that possible? You got guys running around on Saturday who are 6'5" and are 20 pounds away from being a wide receiver. I don't need you to block. Get open. You know what I mean? Beat a linebacker. Run over a safety. Get in the end zone. Hit the seam. You know, gash one from 50. That never, ever happens with the Jets. It's amazing. So they always, I know I'm now bouncing around. I'm going to bounce around a lot. You may as well call this the bounce around pod, because that's what's going to, it's going to revert to that, right? So they can never get a tight end. They can never draft a quarterback. They're trying to fix their offensive line forever. I just don't understand. Well, I do, because there's a correlation to bad ownership or poor ownership and being mismanaged. But they always whiff on the same things. And oh yeah, by the way, lucky for us, those same things only happen to be the most non-negotiable positions on the football field. Yeah, they'll find a safety here and there. You know, they'll find. I mean, corners are obviously important. They'll find a running back who's interesting, like Breece. Do you really need a running back to win? The answer is no. I got to tell you, quick aside, this is off the Jets' beaten path. So, have any of you dealt with this? And it's, I don't know if you heard my doorbell ring before. I'm on my last nerve with this. It has nothing to do with football. So when I was young, a million years ago, what we would do in Brooklyn is we would get eggs on Halloween and we would smash buses and each other, and we'd get shaving cream and we would get a little needle and stick it in the hole that you spread the spray hole, the aerosol hole. You light it on fire and it comes out. So instead of coming out, you know, all thick and squishy, now you can fire it and project it like 15, 20 feet. So we had our fun on Halloween. I think my dad's generation, he told me they would put chalk in a sock and like just smash it on doorsteps, whatever. Harmless fun. You know, not that nobody ever got hit with an egg in the face or whatever, but it was all harmless, right? And this is harmless, but this is just too much. What I'm about to tell you, what I deal with. And I know I'm not alone. So it's bad enough that on Halloween night, my kids, 8 and 9, and every other young kid has 3 bags of candy that goes into the first week of November, almost middle of November. It's ridiculous. And what do I start doing? Daddy starts eating some because daddy likes some candy. Doesn't really buy it, but when it's around, I devour it. What has happened, and I don't know the point of origin, nor do I know who actually invented this. But if I found out, I'd like to have a word with them. There is the tradition now in the suburbs called ghosting or booing. I was telling Sal about this the other day, but he's not there yet. His daughter is 3 and a half, right? Trust me, Sal, you get there. So now this new tradition is, and again, it's cute, it's cool, and it's good connectivity for, you know, for your kids with their friends. What you do is you ring somebody's bell, you put a mask on, and you leave a little bag of candy, and then you, and the parents are driving because they're so young. And, you know, the goal is to not get caught if you're leaving the candy. And every kid, like including mine, they have this mapped out detailed strategy that their mission is to catch their buddies doing it. So they're looking. Of course, they're not doing their homework at this point because they're completely distracted for a meaningless bag of candy. And they will wait, and then they will pounce, and then they will run out. And sometimes if it's one of their good friends, they'll jump on them if they catch them, and they'll wrestle. Again, it's fun. It's awesome. The problem is the doorbell has been ringing incessantly. What is today? The 22nd? I'm not even sure. Since about October 12th. Halloween has started on October 12th. Think about that. And what am I going to be the bad guy? Nope, you can't have the candy, kids. So there's these dribs and drabs of little teeny tiny bags of candy for the 3 weeks leading up to Halloween, and then the three massive bags of candy on Halloween. I just had to get that off my chest because the doorbell just rang again. It's absolute, it's lunacy. I'll leave mommy and daddy some liquor while you're at it so we can watch the Jets and get through this this nonsense. I'm very serious about one thing. I said it earlier. I want to circle back to Garrett because I think it's most applicable with him. He does seem more than sauce. He seems, and we saw it a little during the summer. Remember the clips on social media, the interaction between Rodgers and Garrett Wilson? And there was definitely, I want to say that it was intense. And I have no problem with that. I was in a locker room. I played ball. I understand sometimes it's going to get loud. That's fine. That's fine. Yeah, it's got to, especially when you're trying to establish a new culture and parameters of leadership. So I respect Rodgers for expecting certain guys to be in the right spot. And early on, it seemed like Wilson, not that he was resisting being a good teammate, but he was pushing back in his own way. Hey, well, why should I be here? Or I was here and you didn't see whatever they were talking about, right? Where is that? Where is that fire? Where is that? Now, Garrett has been very accountable. He, you know, that interception off his shoulder pads changed everything. He said it lost him the game. I'm not necessarily a staunch believer that one play alone loses you a game, but that one was pretty close. I want to see Garrett Wilson stop placating, you know, Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers has not demonstrated that he's got the juice to still deserve that respect. Now, I'm not saying that you disrespect Aaron Rodgers. I'm not saying that at all. Those are two very different things. But it is amazing to me that there's no energy on this team. I don't understand that. How the Vegas odds makers can put you on the short list for Super Bowl champions. Your season was derailed a year ago because of the Rodgers injury. So all the hype last year that was also pertinent and very, very much there. I mean, it was omnipresent. It was Rodgers. And I understand why. And it was fun. And it made us feel relevant. But taking Rodgers out of the equation, all the other Jets outside of the new ones that came this year, it's not that many. But the core that was back, that is back, they went through hell last year. So if anybody should be fired up and unaccepting of their current fate, it should be the guys that got their teeth kicked in a year ago who had to wait for Rodgers to get healthy, and they should have come flying out of the chute against San Francisco. They didn't. They should have come flying out of the chute against the Tennessee Titans, and I was there, and they won the game, and they won because Will Levis sucks. That's why. If he doesn't fumble that ball with that ridiculous flip inside, I guess it was around the 12, right around, it was the tight red zone of the Jets, and they were already losing 7-0. It's guaranteed 10-0. It might be 14-0. And the Jets very well might have one win. Okay. So, you know, I can sit here. And again, I will after the game this week, I'll do a little bit more recap. And certainly if they win, I'll get more into the Texans and their scheme and what the Jets have to do to counteract that, blah, blah, blah. But from a visceral perspective, and I'm a highly emotional person. I don't hide it, you know. I love my teams. I love what I do. You know, anything that I'm connected to, whether it's coaching my kids and their friends, I'm all in. You're going to get my heart and you're going to get my soul, because I was a decent athlete, whatever. I played in college. I wasn't that athlete like most of you. There's 1% of the population, a little less actually, that is touched by the hands, the fingers, all 10 of God to make it to the pros. I may have had six if I was lucky, maybe five and a half, whatever. Nowhere near 10. How can you have that athleticism, that chip on your shoulder, these expectations, and sleepwalk through the season? And I tie this all in one big circle. Davante Adams feeling the need to address a team and say, where is the energy? Where is the celebration? When Brees ripped off that 55-yard play, it was like they were at a wake or a funeral, or it was a preseason game, or, you know, just an OTA. Unacceptable. Now, that's generally on the head coach. He's gone. All right. And as I said, this is going to be a little tricky for me moving forward to find, this is going to sound more harsh than I wanted to, more targets, because Robert Saleh was a big target of mine. And now that he's gone, and I'm not going to pile on because he's a really good person. I've said that a million times and I mean it, but he's no longer here. So I can't point to him and say, the abundance of penalties, or once again, no points in the first quarter, or once again on defense, not getting a big stop, or whatever it might be. All the litany of mistakes that derailed his career in defense of him. Also, in too many spots, a lack of true talent, right? But the target now for me is all of them. All of them. Now, I understand, and I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, some of them. Not that they don't care what we've been through as fans, but they really shouldn't care, because this is their job, all right? And they're going to compartmentalize what they need to do, hopefully, because they haven't done it yet, what they need to do. And us as Jets fans, what we do is we reach for every painful memory and we just make it one big ball of hell. You know, you take the mud bowl, you take the fake spike, you take the late hit back in 86, you take a little Kotite, you take Vinny 99 week one Achilles, you take Rodgers week one a year ago Achilles. Yeah, you take Zach, you take Darnold, you take all the other failed draft choices, all the other inept GMs, and we just, you know, in one painful circular, that's our ball of pain, all right? I don't expect them to process the Jets the way we do. They can't. They haven't been fans since the early 80s like me. And if you're older, since the 70s, or if you're younger, the 90s, or even a little bit past that, depending upon how old you are. But geez, you could come out with an ounce of passion and an ounce of pride. You know what I mean? I'll give you the complete antithesis. Now, they're done. The Mets. The Mets had no business doing what they did. None. We're sitting here saying before the season started, and I wasn't alone. Oh my God, this is a 77-win team. Stearns is here to evaluate the roster. All right. They've got a big ticket decision. This is back in February and March. Big ticket decision on Pete Alonso's future and some other things they had to flush through. Is it going to be Beatty? Is it going to be eventually Acuna? And some of the other young players, obviously Vientos, who did not make the team. And they start out 0-5, and they start out 11 games under 500. And what do? They reach for something that I can't respect more. Forget about that I'm a Yankee fan. As a New York sports fan, they overachieved. They just kept fighting and scrapping. And I was among the last to believe, you know, and if you listen to the fan, you know my Lindor takes and some of the other things I've said, which proved to be fairly off base in certain spots. And I own it. That's good. That's fine. But they refuse to be a punching bag. They refuse to be a joke. And based on whether it's some of the bullpen arms they brought in, or, you know, some of the lack of production from key guys or injuries or everything, the Mets should have been done. And I mean done by July. And they weren't. And right now, it's not an exact parallel, because the Jets had expectations and the Mets had none. But here we are. This is the line of delineation. They either give a shit about their uniform, all right, and their teammates and the city and the logo, or they don't. And that's it. That's it. If they come out and they lose, and I mean, even if, let's say, Rodgers, I know the hamstring's a bit of an issue. Let's say he plays and he tweaks it a little bit more and Tyrod's in there and they lose a, it does. I don't care, because one of the things that we all said was, I know I said this, if the Jets had a better backup situation last year behind Aaron Rodgers with that defense, once Rodgers went down, they probably would have squeezed out two more wins, it maybe three, and would have been the playoff team. What's different now? What's different? Actually, if anything, they have a little more talent, except on the front line, you know, front stop and the run. So the excuses are over. It's go time. And I, in my gut, they're going to come out and they're going to win on Sunday. It's going to be fairly uninspiring, fairly low scoring, because the Patriots, they're just awful. God, and I love it. I'm so happy that they stink. I hope that this is their football death sentence. You know what I mean? How many times did they beat us? How many times did they embarrass us? It's your time. But sadly, it's still our time. Like, we can't even flex. Oh, look at the Patriot fans. Suckers. How does it feel to suck? Well, it feels the same way to us, because we still suck until proven otherwise. I do think they win. I don't think it's impressive. I think because of the win, the natural machinations of our minds, hey, it's the third win. You start looking at the bottom of the wild card. You got this. You had the Colts down the road. It should be Jaguars down the road. Miami, all right, Tua is coming back. They'll be a little different, but and I hope that this doesn't happen for the young man's sake, but there's a chance he gets hurt again, you know, and if he does, I mean, that's terrible with his concussions. That's actually really scary. Like, if that was my son, I'd look him in the eye and I'd say, you have to retire. That's what I would do. But he's a warrior, and he's not. But if he goes down again, they're cooked. So that could be two more wins. We will start to get the wheels churning. Here we go. And don't you think that it lines up? Now, I'm going to say perfectly, but it's really the absolute opposite of perfect. It lines up just to give us more pain. Beat the Pats, get win number three, suddenly come to life a little. We talk all week about if they beat the Texans, and the other things I just mentioned, the other very winnable games. And then they go on national TV, and they look like shit. I mean, does anybody else think that that's not going to happen? Again, unkillable. You know, a lot of pride, a lot of heart, a lot of resolve, resilience. Even me, because I don't believe in the fortitude of this team. I don't believe in their heart. I've already pointed out the football deficiencies. It doesn't take a coach to understand what they're good at and what they're not good at. All right, that's the easy stuff. I think the tougher thing is to identify what's inside. And what they've shown us right now, it's not much. Give you a good example real quick to start to wrap it up. The Giants, right? So now you talk a lot about the Giants. Giants aren't good. Giants have very little talent. A couple good players on defense. Neighbors is a beast. Thomas is great on the left side, but he's out. They don't have much. Jones is going to be gone. And now the conversation's back on Dable and Shane's job status. All right. Well, I actually have confidence in Dable. Forget about Shane. His job is to get players. I have confidence, enough confidence in Dable to stabilize it, so that even if they get smoked this upcoming game against the Steelers on national TV, he will find a way to make it look presentable enough, like he did last year with Tommy DeVito, not his backup, his third stringer, to at least give Giant fans fuel to support him. And that's a real thing. Like, that's a real conviction. You know, give you another example, the Knicks. Knicks got waxed on opening night by the Celtics. They made the big Karl Anthony Towns move. I like it. I don't love it. I think they lost some heart. They're going to miss DiVincenzo, whatever. This is not a basketball podcast. But the point is, I've got great faith in Tom Thibodeau to fix up some defensive issues. Plus, the Celtics aren't going to shoot that well again ever. And I've got supreme confidence in faith in the steady hand and greatness of Jalen Brunson, to even if they languish early because they've got some new pieces, to eventually get the mojo, get it rolling, and become a team that's very dangerous and on the short list to get to the Eastern Conference Finals and beyond, you know, by latest January. You know what I mean? The Jets? Where's the confidence? It's blind. Do you believe in the owner? No. Do you believe in the head coach? How could you? I like Ulbrich, but come on. Do you believe in Joe Douglas? How many chances is Joe getting? You know, Joe, I love you, but you haven't built a good team yet. You just haven't. Do you have confidence in Rodgers staying healthy or playing better? Not really. I don't. Do you have confidence in Tyron Smith, who has looked awful? Now, of course, you know, we get all the legends when they're done. You get Ronnie Lott's a Jet. Fantastic. Oh, it's this version of Ronnie Lott. Oh, the Jets got Tyron Smith. Oh, it's all right. It's the version that we were very fearful that we were getting. Tyron Smith on film looks bad, like to the point where he's whiffing on some moves where he's on the floor. And I think part of it's derived from a bad back and he's getting older. And I get it. And he's a Hall of Famer, but not a Hall of Famer as a Jet. So who are we looking at that's going to say, you know what? Enough. Enough. Come follow me. I got it. I got you. And I thought that person was Rodgers. I don't believe that. I don't believe it. If you handed me, I got a couple notes I jot down for the pod. I like to just go off the top of the head, but I got a couple things I wanted to get in there, which I already did. But if you told me, hey, Brandon, here's a sheet of paper, and you can sign this contract the first week of camp. You will have three straight chances with the football to win the game with Rodgers. 0-1, 0-2, 0-3. Those are just facts. I mean, yeah, we can conjure up, again, some blind faith because he doesn't look very good. And without faith, I mean, why are we even doing this? There's no reason to watch. So there's got to be some of that. And there is. But man, they have been a joke so far. They have been so disappointing. And they have been, in the sporting sense, the Jets have been a disgrace. I mean, it is very hard. Hard. Actually, it's almost impossible. I'm not sure I can think of another example. Forget about New York teams. Any teams where you're supposed to be in the mix for a Super Bowl and you get derailed to the point so badly that there's infighting and this, and now you're a punching bag joke again. Don't get me wrong. Like when Vinny went down in 99, Parcells eventually pieced together a decent season. Should have gone to my boy Ray Lucas earlier instead of riding out Rick Myra, who was trash. But like, you knew Parcells would piece something together. These guys are going to piece something together? That's the hope, but that is not the belief right now. They'll win Sunday. It won't be incredibly impressive. And we'll talk about it. We'll move to the Texans. And then deep down, as we settle in, and my son wears his Rodgers jersey because he can't wear his Darnold or Wilson jersey to school anymore. Hey, Santa, stop bringing jerseys. Nobody stays. We'll sit on the couch, get our food ready, look at my Namath jersey, probably start pretty well, right? Usually how it goes. And then you just think something's going to go wrong. And who's going to stop it? And that's the problem. All right. Episode number 2 is in the books. That's it. I hope you guys enjoyed this. You know, I really appreciate the support. Obviously, you get this anywhere you get your pods, YouTube. You can check out the video. Follow me on social media, on X and Instagram. I'll get you some stuff out there as well. Spread the word. I believe, definitely, we've already talked about this. Me and my guy, Evan, we're going to start taking some live comments. So he'll bring them on the air after the game. I'll react to them in real time. And each week we'll add a new element. We'll build this thing out. We'll get more and more traction. And we'll just make it the best Jets podcast that we can make it. And it's always going to be rooted in hope. It's always going to be rooted in hope. But until it changes, it's always going to be rooted in the reality of we still suck. We still suck. All right, man. I'll talk to you guys soon. I'll catch you on WFAN every day, 10 to 2 with my guy, Sal. And I'll see you soon. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.